more time to think about culture. We're not quite done yet. I just wanted you to get a little bit down on paper before we moved on. And really, this is an illustration. And I wanted to give you an example of what happens when organizational culture changes, when you make a change to it, when you make a decision, something's going to be different. And because you're going to need to translate the culture for whatever the change is that you've implemented. So the example, and this is, it's kind of a funny one. There came a time in the early 90s when the company had made a decision that we were going to blend a zoo environment with a theme park environment. You know, Walt Disney always had a love of animals. I mean, he wanted real animals on the Jungle Cruise back in 1955. Would have been completely, there's many words for what it would have been. You know, fiasco, destruction, things like that. It was an idea that was way before its time. But in the 90s, it wasn't any longer. So the company made a decision, we're gonna blend the two. We're gonna blend a zoo environment with a theme park environment. And we're going to integrate that idea of zoological, of these animals and conservation efforts into the bigger Disney culture. So the actions we took, leadership actively assisted the cast in understanding and operationalizing the Disney culture for this new role of animals. And we defined the unique characteristics of Disney's Animal Kingdom theme park and Disney's Animal Kingdom Lodge. Because this was a whole new endeavor for us. And you have to know it was confusing on both sides. It was confusing for the Disney people because we're not animal people. And it was confusing for the animal people because they weren't Disney people. So what I want to show you is actually, I'm just going to be completely transparent with you. It's a brand new video. It has not even been edited. This is a rough cut. Yeah, those are the best. So it's real. This is Disney at its most real, right? But even for a rough cut, it's pretty slick. So, you know, we've got a team that's amazing. This is a gentleman who is he's a very, very good friend of mine, and he's a good friend of Disney in general. His name's Greg Pesce. He's actually quoted here in your book on page 14, should you have a 14 in your book. And I was able to get him on video talking about this because, you know, in every organization, there's sort of this in and out kind of group. You know, people who get the culture, people who don't get the culture, how do you translate it as a leader? You know, how do you sort of stand up and translate it, create vision for culture and things like that? So I was able to get Greg on tape, and no one's ever seen it except for Ryan and Bruce and I. So we're going to cross our fingers that everything works. And the reason I show it to you, even in rough form, is because he couldn't be here in person. And unfortunately, today he couldn't be here through Skype. You know, we could typically Skype him in. But unfortunately, today he couldn't. I would normally share this with you, but it's kind of cool. So he and his team has been able to do something. They've been able to do something that zoos around the country have not been able to do. And it is have bachelor groups of animals live on a savanna together. So apparently you can't put different species of bachelor groups together because all the boys fight. I think, you know, everybody's sort of jockeying for position, you know, in the hierarchy. But they've managed to do it successfully. So he's at a conference talking about how he's been able to do that and unable to be here with you. So let's take a look at the video.
Not from the corporate environment. I'm from the zoo environment. I didn't necessarily come to Disney to build great guest satisfaction or to care for my people and things like that. I came here because I wanted to care for animals, and I wanted to build a strong team of keepers who would also care for the animals. You may have individual departments or your whole organization may feel like I did at the time, not intrinsically a part of the larger corporate environment, but having to operate as a part of that environment. Disney has a rich tradition of storytelling. As a leader, I use stories to build our culture. As I mentioned, my department didn't initially think of ourselves as a Disney department. We're zoo people, and we were brought to Disney to sustain an environment for the animals that would be part of Disney's Animal Kingdom, and my location, Disney's Animal Kingdom Lodge. We were looked upon as strangers to the Disney environment and perceived as pariahs by the zoo community. Disney's an entertainment company, and we weren't entertainers and didn't fit into that culture. And that culture we did fit in saw entertainment as not in alignment with the serious work of conservation. We really didn't have a place or a strong culture. So what happened? Disney committed the resources to do what needed to be done in terms of conservation efforts because they have a strong passion and belief in doing this new venture correctly. That passion goes all the way back to Walt Disney himself, a lover of animals and a conservationist before that was even a word. Organizations will fund the resources for things they really believe in, and animal programs was something the Disney company believed in. Now, we're leaders in the AZA community. We lead the way in breeding, education, research, and we did this by jumping over a lot of hurdles. We created an advisory board that included members that were zoo directors, zoo vets, and respected conservation heroes like Jane Goodall. We created a not-for-profit called Disney's Worldwide Conservation Fund to bring in funds for grassroots conservation organizations. All these examples are now part of our culture. They're stories that each new keeper must know. We have an interesting story when it comes to language and symbols. Animal care people are typically what we would call at Disney backstage employees. In other words, we work where the guests do not see us. That fosters a certain liberal agenda when it comes to word choice. And the word choice at zoos is not always what we would want guests to hear. At Disney, we had to adapt to a new language, and this one was family and guest friendly. It turns out the language is also more cast friendly. At our facilities, keepers work in guest areas and in backstage areas, so they need to be very aware and diligent in using appropriate language. Cast member, guest, the two-finger point. More particularly, terms of language. We have a code system, much like many organizations, that would be clear to the cast and unclear to the guest, so we do not disturb the show for our guests. We also have a great opportunity to share zoo language with the guests. Most of it has to do with animal names and interesting information about the animals, as well as the science of animal care. I'll give you an example. An SSP is a species survival plan, which means every endangered species has a species survival plan to manage the breeding of that particular species. By doing this, we get the best genetic match to breed these animals, and the whole species has a better chance of survival. With regard to symbols, this was a place that as a leader, I had to assist my team to understand that they were not only responsible for the zoo-like duties, but they also needed to be aware that things like costumes, name tags, and welcome signs for new cast members are all symbols of the Disney culture, and it became my responsibility to make sure it was always top of mind. This becomes an interesting story. We do have shared values that you've already heard. Let me explain now how we mesh two sets of values together. With the addition of animal care and stronger conservation efforts, we've been able to influence how the values are interpreted. For example, respect in the past may have been looked at through the lens of people. Now we look at this concept not only with regard to people, but also with regard to wild animals and wild places. Integrity becomes not only walking the walk with regard to our business practices, but also with regard to our business practice and how we portray animals in our films and TV programs, and how we feature animals in our park. In other words, we do not have the animals dress up in costumes or jump through hoops like you might see in a Disney animated cartoon. No hippos in pink tutus like from Fantasia. We also put an animal filter on well-known Disney traits and behaviors, things like safety and cleanliness, and we bring those things to life for the animals and the guests every day. We also added a trait to the list, animal care excellence. What we mean by this term is a trait of consistent commitment to doing the right things for the individual animals and for the species under our care. Behaviors that bring this trait to life include staffing philosophy that allows us the ability to train and enrich, finding ways to keep the animals stimulated to promote good physical and mental health. Avoiding negative reinforcement, such as hosing animals. And we expect all the keepers to have guest interactions to share their knowledge to encourage proper care for each of these species. We entertain by sharing knowledge and stories and natural behaviors of the animals, as well as conservation messages. Ultimately, all of the manners in which we entertain result in guests understanding how to be a part of conservation efforts. Here's what I've learned. In general, animal people are not people people. We either had to learn it or we had to find them if we wanted to have both. I believe that every person, regardless of their profession, has an innate wish to make a difference in someone else's life, in their field, in the world. For many of the zoo professionals, it's a desire to make a difference for the animals or for the environment, directly by doing it yourself, or indirectly by influencing others to take action. As a business and a company with a stock price, we want to have a product that will be profitable. But as a business and a company that puts value on the name Disney, we also have a commitment to be the role model, the innovator, and the motivator. It's where magic lives and dreams come true, but it's also where reality lives. And sometimes there needs to be a realization that some dreams need a little help. With a little pixie dust, a smile or two, and a commitment to conservation, raising awareness, and inspiring action, the culture has taken hold in the animal care side of our business. But not because we had to assimilate, because we really do talk the same language at the core. The accent just might be a little bit different.
So why do I show you this video? Disney did, is the irony to it. I think what animal care believed in the beginning was we have to figure out a way to place ourselves in Disney culture. But as you hear Greg speak, you realize they had the opportunity to impact us. So it was, if you've ever said these words, you know, they don't understand us, like they don't understand our department. Our department's different, they don't understand. That's how they felt. And the cool thing was being able to say, here's what's really important about who we are, you can embrace this too, and now we do. Kind of interesting. So you'll never see a Disney television show or a Disney film that has particularly primates, because it's normally in films primates typically, that you'll see them doing something that a primate wouldn't do. Because if we've embraced something different. Now, did you see that 30 years ago in a Disney film? Probably. Will you today? No. Because times have changed. So what else do you take away from Greg's message about culture?
We have to be trained on it. You can't just walk into a place and understand the culture.
Yeah, how many times did he say, I have to train my people. I have to teach my people. I have to let my people know.
He started out very much with the animal people normally aren't people people, and
right.
You have to either find the right one, some combination of finding the right people and training them.
Right. Because intrinsically, they don't come to you that way.
No, they're
zoo people and theme park people are very different. So you have to find the right ones. You know, we have that kind of running joke at Disney that engineers, same way, right? But our engineers are actually very people-friendly, and because you have to find them. You have to go out and find them. Did you have another thought? Or,
well, I just love what you said with having people having their name.
And can you imagine as a leader, that's the way he approaches leading his team, thinking every person here has an innate wish to make a difference, whether it's in their field, you know, or whether it's with conservation efforts, or whether we all have that desire. And if you approach leading in that way, what an amazing team you create. There's nobody, I went around and talked to some of his team members, nobody ever wants to leave him. Because he approaches them in that manner. There was a hand up, yeah.
I was just mentioning back to trying to get that culture in that, is that he took a lot of Disney values.
Yes.
To reinforce physicality.
So he built this great bridge. It became a communication bridge of how to talk animal and how to talk Disney. Because Disney people already knew how to talk safety, right? So he puts his animal spin on it. That builds a great bridge of communication to the theme park side from the animal side. Because you gotta find those ways to connect, right? If you feel like you're a part of the organization that might be misunderstood, or in this particular instance, you're new to the organization. That was a good catch.
Stories.
Stories. He does it by telling stories.
Because do we remember stories much longer?
Stories. The entire staff having to know all the stories.
The whole staff has to know the stories. Every keeper has to know the stories.
Personally, over here.
I like the part where he just kind of resists their students. The first part where he didn't think it was going to happen. He didn't want to drink the Disney Kool-Aid because he didn't think they would be able to run the same way. They would have to align the beliefs and practices they were able to get the result.
There was much trepidation at first. You know, it's a scary place to be, to start. It's like an upstart business, right? You know, starting from kind of nothing. And, you know, and then you're in this position where you don't really fit. You know, you can't sit with these people at lunch because you don't really fit with them. But the people that you used to sit with don't like you anymore. So, where do you go? You know, now the American Zoological Association is clamoring to come and talk with us because of the efforts in conservation, because of the breeding, you know, efforts that have gone on and the successes that we've had breeding in captivity, and many more successes than most zoos are able to accomplish.
I just like how they have mentioned a code system where the customers or the guests don't know, you know, what the employees may be talking about.
Yes.
I found that interesting.
Yeah, the Species Survival Plan, an SSP. They also, you'll hear them say, it's an SB, shoot, I can only remember the S and the B. And the S and the B is for a stud book. So every animal has a stud book because we have to know what animals can mate with what animals to mate more animals. And not every animal's a good fit, you know, for, you know, just like every man doesn't love every woman, you know, you have to find the right pairings. So sometimes we have to talk about that on stage because we might be moving an animal for that reason because we're trying some breeding efforts with that animal. But we're not going to walk out on stage and go, well, you know, the stud book says we got to move that Red River hog over because we're, you know, that's weird. And wouldn't you guys think that was creepy? You know, so having that kind of language that you can speak comfortably in front of guests, everyone understands what you're talking about, but it doesn't impact the show. So it's your time to do some thinking. We're getting into the It's Off to Work We Go segment. So as you begin to get to work, just a couple of reminders to wrap up culture. Culture is the foundation on which the success of your organization is based. Remember, it's this: culture equals results. Whatever, however you're going to define results, the best employee equals the desired behaviors, and the desired behaviors equals the culture. So guess what? The best employees you have already exhibit your desired culture. So you have on page 16 in your book, and you're going to have these all throughout the day today. This one just happens to be more brief because we had only one insight around culture. So every time we get to adaptation time, you'll have the Disney insight, you'll have the example of how we talked to you about it, and then you'll have a space for you to write how you might do it. So for this one, we're going to wrap this into a break. So I'm going to give you 17 minutes. And in that 17 minutes time, please make your notes, talk to your team members who are here, and also get something to drink, take a little break, answer a phone call if you need to. So my clock up here says 9:26. That means we're starting back at 9:43. So I'll see you at 9:43.